Hello, my name's Andrew Coward, and I'm the CEO of Lumina Networks. Today, I want to talk about network automation, and specifically, network automation in large multi-vendor networks. Now, over the last 5 or 6 years, many large network operators have been trying to automate their networks. And through that time period, a lot of myths have kind of grown up about what actually works and what doesn't. And today, I want to debunk a few of those myths and kind of focus on what we know as Lumina Networks, having operated over the last 6 years in this market, about what works and what doesn't. Now, we face a particular challenge at the moment, particularly in the telco environment, not just because of COVID, but also because of 5G and the rollout of 5G. And as a consequence of those two things, there's a massive amount of infrastructure that's being deployed in the network right now. As a consequence, there's a kind of delayed action in terms of the automation requirements that are taking place here, because as this equipment goes in many cases, it's still being configured the old way, meaning a command line, a craft interface, something pretty basic. And that means that as we get to the kind of rollout and the further deployment of this, we really are going to need a way of automating this technology. So today we want to talk about some of those things and kind of, as I say, some of the myths that have grown up around it. So let's start with strategy. So for many network operators, they start their automation journey with trying to automate something. It could be I want to automate the provisioning of a service. It might be I want to automate the collection of information for trouble ticketing. It might be something pretty basic. But individually, these automation tasks do not make up a strategy. And oftentimes, as service providers have kind of gone down this path of trying to automate one thing, they then get stuck in that one area and try and apply that same technology across the rest of the network. And of course, that's when they run into trouble. So for each automation project, you really have to think about four main areas that automation is going to touch if the project is going to be successful. The first, and perhaps obviously, is orchestration, meaning how am I going to initially provision and set up this connection? What tools am I going to need? How is that actually going to work? And how do I know it's been successful? The second thing to think about, though, of course, is what happens after it's been deployed. How am I going to get information off that device to know if it's working well, if assurance levels are being met, and so on? So analytics and, of course, security and pulling that information off is very much a part of that framework and must be addressed at the same time. The third element is workflow. And workflow is critical for achieving tasks. Obviously, they may be linked to the original orchestration event, but oftentimes the events are things that happen afterwards, like what happens if there's a link failure? What happens if the performance of the network isn't working very well? What do I do? And if you think about what an expert would do to go resolve those things, you now kind of want to code that in an automatic framework in a workflow engine so that you can kind of achieve the same thing automatically. And for that, obviously a workflow engine needs to be put in place to deliver that on that functionality. Now, there's a fourth element as well, and some of this is linked to what the device manufacturers may originally provide with their equipment in the way of an element management system. And you may still need to touch this, even though you've got a large amount of automation in place, to do things like tuning optics or doing some of the more esoteric things that happen from time to time. So the things that you might touch very, very infrequently, but you still need a mechanism to do that. Linked to that, there's also applications that you might want to run on the network above the device level. It could be things like path compute engines or dynamically changing paths or path creation or dynamically, all those kinds of things are essentially applications that will want to take action in your network, and you want to allow them to do that and have to be enabled, maybe through an API or maybe through a graphical user interface. So those four areas are really kind of critical when you think about anything that's going to go into automation, and the strategy should encompass those four key areas. So let's now turn and look at how some of the vendors are approaching these issues. Now, there's a lot of vendors in the automation space, perhaps not surprisingly, and where a lot of service providers start is in service orchestration, There's a number of orchestration vendors out there, and it's a good a place as any to start with. Now, when we talk about strategy, we talk about framework. There are a number of things that need to go into that framework. And some of the orchestration vendors have taken the approach of trying to resolve and solve everything they have through their own stacks, through kind of something that's vertically integrated. And that can work reasonably well when you have one vendor managing their own products. But when it comes to a multi-vendor environment, you kind of need something in between the orchestration engine and the network. And that the job of that something, if you like, is to interpret the instructions of the orchestrator into the device-specific things that are necessary to go configure a different type of device. So, for example, if you take something like Blue Planet from Ciena, how is that going to manage a device from Cisco or a device from Infinera or somebody else? And that's where SDN is often deployed, certainly in these large networks, as a way of translating business logic from one thing to another. Again, it doesn't have to be Blue Planet. It could be a proprietary homegrown system. It could be any number of things, including open source. But the point is that that SDN layer is absolutely needed to form that transformation, that translation. Now, it is possible, from an orchestration perspective, to directly code the devices into the orchestration. And it can be done. It's just extraordinarily hard. It's the difference, if you think about it, from taking a flight, for example, from San Francisco to New York, as opposed to driving. Driving is going to take a lot longer. You might break down or have issues along the way. And when you get to New York, you realize you've still got to drive all the way back. So what that means in reality for deploying just orchestrators without SDN, without any of the intermediate layers, is that you're pretty much hard coding that device into the orchestrator. And one of the challenges that comes up when you do that is the ongoing support of that device. So obviously, if you've got a proprietary vendor that's now responsible for managing another proprietary vendor, you're going to be in kind of vendor hell, if you like, as they point to each other and say, well, that's not my problem. And if that's going to happen at the beginning of the project, something as simple as a device upgrade, software upgrade later, can cause all of the orchestration to fail. And it's on the onus of the orchestration vendor, or often the customer, to go resolve that. That's not a good outcome. So the myth that you can simply deploy orchestration without SDN, without an intermediate layer to basically translate into the different vendors, is a fallacy. And frankly, is causing a huge number of projects to slow down, if not come to a complete halt, because they simply can't get this device integration done. They're essentially stuck halfway across the country, if you've heard my analogy. So fundamentally, then, the job of the SDN controller is really to do that translation. And interestingly, and particularly when you use open source, what happens is that's the vendor's responsibility to show up working with a competent interface, a competent NetConf interface, which is what we typically use, a competent Yang model. And it isn't just because the IETF say that's the way to do it, or TIP has defined a model to do it. It's because the major telcos, like AT&T and Verizon, have demanded that the vendors actually show up working, particularly with a project called Open Daylight, which is what Lumina's focused on. So when you do that, essentially what you're doing is you're shifting responsibility about doing the integration, if you like, from yourselves as a service provider, from your orchestration vendor, and back onto the device vendor underneath it. Much in the same way as historically, if you think about it, if you buy a product today, you expect it to work on Ethernet. You're not having an argument about whether Ethernet works. If you buy a router, you're not expecting to have an argument over whether they've got a competent BGP interface. That's something that you'll test and you'll prove before you deploy. And so having a NetConf interface, having a Yang model, and being able to plug into Open Daylight is an absolute requirement for most vendors selling into Tier 1 carriers today. And that alleviates many of these issues that we talk about. So let's talk about the next myth. And the next myth is about overlay networks. Now, an overlay network can be as simple as a VPN connection between two points, such as we're all using from our homes to get into our offices these days. It could be something that connects data center to resources, like a Contrail or a Nuage or NSX, or it could be an SD-WAN solution that's relying on overlays to build the connectivity. And the fallacy is simply that using this technology simplifies the network. It doesn't. Now, don't get me wrong, these technologies are amazing, really important for building overlays simply and easily on top of the underlying infrastructure. But they do nothing to actually help you provision or manage the optical layer, the IP layer, the MPLS layer, all of the things that go underneath that. And worse, because they don't really have any understanding about what's going on underneath, when an SD-WAN solution starts moving customers around from service to service, that can actually have a knock-on impact on other services too. And so they're kind of operating like ships in the night. And so you have to think about overlay networks as a divisive strategy, in the sense that you're adding yet another thing to the network to go manage. And so when we think about SDN, where we should be heading is an inclusive strategy where you're bringing something into the domain. So as you think about using overlay networks and all the value they bring, they have also to be brought into the common automation framework, so that when you finish provisioning the underlay, you then provision the overlay. Or indeed, in solutions that we built, for example, with VMware, you can have the overlay signal that it actually wants support from the underlay to deliver the service. So I build a connection, for example, between a data center and an edge compute facility. I now want an MPLS path to be instantiated underneath that to support the tunnel I've built. So you're kind of joining the overlay with the underlay together. So now you're kind of aware of what's going on. So myth is that they simplify networks. Actually, a lot of value there, but they make things a lot more complicated, and you've got to figure out how you're going to manage them in the context of everything else you've got going on. So let's talk about the third myth, and that's around workflow automation. And the premise of workflow automation, obviously, is that you can get tasks to be automated, happening by themselves, as if an expert were doing things. And one of the ways that you want workflows to work is that they help with network upgrade cycles. And unless they're managed and built very carefully, they don't. They actually have the exact opposite effect, something of a paradox. You build automation, you expect it to accelerate things and make things easy, but when it comes to an upgrade, it can actually make things much harder. And the reason for that, if we go back to the watchword of the day, which is abstraction. So a lot of the workflow engines and a lot of the way workways workflows are constructed pretty early on are linked directly to managing the underlying devices in a kind of hard-coded way. So let's say, for example, you want to look at a monitor a device to look for link failures. And we see a link failure, you're going to try and do something dynamically, automatically to go provision or make something else happen to reroute that traffic and make a decision. And workflow engines are very good at that. But if that workflow is hard-coded and directly driven into an end device, say a Cisco router or a Juniper router or something like that, then, of course, what tends to happen, particularly when you're on an upgrade cycle, is that things move around. The version of software of the router changes. The interface numbers may shift. And suddenly, none of your scripts work anymore because, again, they were hard-coded. So going back to the value of an SDN controller in this space, and one of the things that happen really well is when you combine workflow engines on top of the SDN controller. Because now, not only do you not care and don't need to know about the underlying version of software that's running on the router, you don't even necessarily care about what vendor the router belongs to. So you could swap one vendor out for another, your workflow will still work because it's being translated to the specific actions and logic of the device that's needed. And again, as with orchestration, it's up to the device vendor to make sure they're showing up with a competent implementation of NetConf and Yang and OpenFlow integration, Open Daylight integration, so that you've got a common way of being able to drive this through automation and through these workflow engines. Now, as a consequence of building off an SDN controller, you essentially get a lot of the benefits of all the technologies that you're calling out, the orchestration, the workflow engine, and so on, but you've built it in a much tighter strategy. So perhaps it isn't surprising that the orchestration vendors and many of the automation vendors are trying to sell themselves essentially as a single-stop shop. Come to me, and I will solve all these problems. That just really isn't the reality today. And there is a little bit of work involved in making sure when you go to automation, when you drive automation, you put the right framework in place. If you look at the IETF models, if you look at more recent telecom infrastructure project, TIP, you see there's an SDN controller in there, and they're in there for good reason. Also think through, as you think about the role of an SDN controller, it plays out in both physical and virtual. So as you're moving physical devices into their logical equivalents, virtual equivalents onto servers, again, you don't want the provisioning logic, the business logic to change as you go through that exercise. It shouldn't matter to your business process whether something's physical, logical, whether it's on a virtual machine or whether it's in a container. You want it to act the same. And so the role of the SDN controller, again, is to basically bridge between these things and provide this common interface, this common northbound in which the orchestrator, the workflow engines, the analytics tools, all the northbound information is normalized. And so you have a common experience. And as you go through network upgrades, you end up with a smoother experience. As you deliver and put new tools onto the system, those two are plugged directly into it. So for more information, please come to our website, www.luminanetworks.com. I look forward to speaking to you on my next session. Thank you.